Welcome, everybody. And today I'm going to be talking with my friend Mark, aka Teacher Mark, but it's spelled with a T-I because that's how you might think to spell it if Spanish were your first language. And I've known Mark for years professionally, and he's been in my Accent Teachers Academy for a long time. It's a mastermind for English teachers who want to specialize in pronunciation or become accent coaches like us. And we're both really passionate about the IPA. But the coolest thing about this podcast episode is that it's live. It's the first time I've had somebody actually come to my studio. But it's even more special because Mark lives in Mexico City and I live in Guadalajara, so he came here. And I have this tradition for people who come to Guadalajara and meet me, and that is that we exchange mugs. So Mark brought me these adorable, tiny little mugs with luchador faces on them, right? So if you know Mexican lucha, then these are very famous little figures, I guess, or masks, and they have these little handles. But they're not, I mean, I guess you could use them for espresso, but more likely they would be used for tequila or something like that. So thanks, Mark. And now let's get on with the show.
Hey, how are you?
Oh my God, it's so good to see you in person.
It is, right?
Yeah.
I'm so excited to be here with you. We're going to talk about the IPA, which is one of my favorite topics. Is it one of your favorite topics?
Absolutely. I love the IPA. I use the chart mostly for vowels because I feel like I'm the queen of vowels. But also there's the consonants and then there's the vowel chart. And so today we're going to talk about, we love the IPA.
We do.
But
what?
There are some things where it's lacking. And so if you're familiar with the IPA chart, we're going to say like some observations that we have, maybe.
Some limitation. Yeah. It can't get us, like me as a non-native speaker, it can't get us that far. I was talking to you earlier today. That it's more like riding a bicycle with the training wheels. That the training wheels are the IPA. And I have a better analogy for this, like a more in-depth analogy.
Maybe later. Yeah.
We're gonna explore it later because we can't go that far right now.
Yeah. So you said like, oh, as a non-native speaker, I can use it as kind of training wheels to learn this other language. But I know for myself as a native speaker, I didn't learn this in elementary or high school or anything like that. I learned IPA because I was learning French. I was a French major in university for a while, and I took this course called French Phonetics, and I think even at the time I didn't know what phonetics meant. I was like, this looks interesting. And I took the course, and the first day they throw this chart in front of us, and I'm like, ooh, this is a bit scary. But then it was like my best friend. Like, this chart was, it saved me, you know? Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see it that way too. Like, at the beginning it was a little bit menacing. And you know, like, I've been teaching for so many years, and probably the first half of my teaching experience, we, like me and my colleagues, we never used that chart, and it was so foreign to us that we couldn't even see, number one, what it was about, and number two, like how it could help us. No one taught us this. This is so foreign. It was really, really foreign to us.
And maybe intimidating. Like my experience was like, whoa. Give me some context here. I don't even know what I'm looking at, you know?
So. Yeah. In our case, or at least in my case, it was so foreign to me that it was not even scary. It was just like my brain would not, like it didn't really process it. It just was just so like reading Greek, basically.
Which it's funny you say that because imagine if Greek is your first language and you don't even use the Latin alphabet. And then they're like, hey, use this IPA. You're like, what, I have to learn a different alphabet just to learn a thing to help me?
Right.
I can only imagine how if you don't already use our letters, which we share, you know, between Spanish and English, then I can see how it could be even worse for most people, you know?
And that's, I think, that one of the first limitations that the voice, human voice is, let's put it this way, it's an analog thing. And it's the representation of sounds is more like digital. Like there are not enough symbols to represent language, like these nuances between the sounds that we make when we speak. So I think that's one of the things that if we're not, this happened to me, like at the beginning, I fell in love with the IPA so much that I thought, okay, this is going to be like, this is the only thing I need to sound natural to sound clear in English. It turns out, spoiler alert, it's not. It was not the only thing I needed to work on, but I mean, it's a beginning. Looking back, I think it's the first step you have to take to start improving your pronunciation in English.
And for me, it was in French originally, because if anybody out there has learned French, it's similar to English in that you have a spelling and what does it have to do with how you pronounce it, you know? And so I needed that, or I should say my French level went way up. Once I learned to decipher this magical chart, love you, IPA, then I got really much better at my pronunciation in French, right? But it was a trial, I think, to get through it. It's almost like a badge of honor. You're like, I know the IPA now, right. You know?
Yeah. Right, because that's another thing. When we're learning English, and I've seen it with my students countless times, at the beginning, they see this chart because now I know how to present it to my students, right? Like, it's not really like you can, if you do it on your own, you can get this menacing feeling, right? This scary feeling. But when someone comes up to you and tells you like how to take those steps to understand it and to use it, then it's easier. But yeah, in my case, it wasn't like that. It was like I came across it by chance. I didn't even know it existed. I just knew that there was something in my speech that was not... It created this barrier between sounding clear and just the way I sounded. Yeah.
So something was missing. This was like a key part of your progress. But like you said, you outgrew it after a while because it has its limitations. And
right.
Yeah. And something else you mentioned, I think, was also interesting. When you first encountered the IPA, was it the vowels or the consonants that you started with?
Vowels or consonants. Okay.
Remember.
I kind of do. Okay. So I remember the official chart that comes in, because I also bought it, and I forgot to bring it. It's the Handbook of the International Phonetic Association. So there you can see the official chart with all the diacritics, like the little symbols, which are more for like linguists, mm-hmm. right? That was like the scary thing, but thank God I didn't see that part.
I would have run away screaming.
The way I came across it is, so I was a very avid listener of podcasts. So at some point I got like the algorithm suggested. I came across this podcast and I started listening to these episodes where each episode was a specific sound. I didn't see the chart. Like, I just remember listening to the audios and be like, oh, okay, so this is how you pronounce these words, and this is how you pronounce these words, and this is how you pronounce these words. So in the way it worked with me is vowels and consonants were all mixed up. It was years later that I saw the official chart and I was like, okay, this is, and that's when I got a little bit confused. I was like, okay, have I not been learning enough? And then the second part of my journey started, because I also, after seeing that chart, I was like, okay, I want to learn more about it. And then I realized that there were these different charts and I was like, okay, which one is the right one, right? It's like basic like religions, right? Like, which one is the real God?
The gospel of IPA. Which one is the correct one?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. And so, and that's also very interesting, because I think most of us, well, you know, we learn often in school, most of us learn a lot of reading and lists and vocabulary and grammar and stuff. And then we don't have as much speaking as we would like. But then later, we kind of have to undo a lot of that learning from speaking, because we're like we said, the spelling is very different. And then we'd be like, well, what sound is that? Do I say becows? Because there's an and a U there, right? And you say, well, no, actually, it's like, like umbrella, it's because, you know, but why? Like, forget about why, but this is the sound, you know, you have to match like the sound. So I think it's really interesting how you started with the sounds and hearing all of these. And then later you had this visual, you know, to put to it too. Because I think a lot of people don't get enough listening, you know, and especially they can't discriminate some of those sounds. And so I think that's super interesting how you learned it. When I did it, it was in French, of course. And then, you know, they would match the sounds. But here's the trouble. When I learned it in French, they would say the French word, and number one, I was like, I don't know what that word is. I don't know how to pronounce it. Yeah. I certainly don't know how to spell it. And so I knew it could be helpful, but I knew I didn't know enough of the language, at least the way they were teaching it, to make it useful, you know, for me.
Yeah, they probably taught you too early. And I mean, it's one of these situations, like, doom if you do and doom if you don't.
Yeah, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Because, like... at the same time, in my case, after years of knowing the language and using it, and then I came across the IPA chart and I had to relearn everything. So it was like a disadvantage because I still have these fossilized issues, fossilization, you know, like
fossilized errors.
I still have to work on. But if you start too early, then it can be too overwhelming that you can't really process it and your brain is like, I don't know. It's just, I'd rather do like exercises on paper, forget about speaking. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Well, actually, you know what? After this experience, what I started doing is every time I taught my beginning students, my beginners, every time I taught my students that were beginning to learn the language, I would show them the IPA chart. It was always on the wall. And I would tell them like, okay, so we're going to cover, these are the sounds of English. We're going to explore them little by little. But I would have it all the time there to introduce them very slowly. Mm. So they would, first of all, become familiar with the little symbols because, it's a different alphabet.
It's scary. Yeah, it's like, why do you do that? It doesn't make any sense. But I like your idea of exposure, right? Like, oh, it's just on the background. It's back there. And when I usually start with clients, they're not beginners in the language, but they are beginners with me and they're beginners to like pronunciation work and accent. So the very first thing they see is that chart. I kind of took the chart, spoiler, we have problems with the IPA chart, at least me with the vowels. So I kind of made my own version, which I feel like is a bit more clear. We'll put that in the link as well so you guys can have my chart and also compare it to the, let's say, official chart, right? So we can include that too so you guys can compare. Yeah. And what I was getting at is that exposure idea is like, it is a little bit scary and it's a bit much and, oh my God, all the diacritics, right? If you see those, you're like, ooh, and then what? Mm. And so I like to do it first thing also and just say, you know what? You don't need to know these symbols, but if you're having trouble with a sound, that's the one I want you to know. Just know that symbol, right? Like we said earlier, as an umbrella, you should know that it's kind of like a triangle shape, right? That's the sound you're working on. Yeah, learn that. But it's not, to me, it's not homework. Go and learn all the IPA and then I'll talk to you later. Yeah, no. I know some people have that as kind of like a prerequisite. And I feel the same way. I feel like that's going to like turn people off or it's not going to be as useful, you know, in that way. But I like the idea of like bit of exposure, you know, learning as you go kind of thing.
I was laughing a little bit because you said you have your own chart, right, to present the sounds. And I was thinking, oh, I also have my own chart. Because, I mean, it's actually not really a chart. It's, okay, let's mention this. The chart, that like the official ones, they show the sounds in like a specific, like a table, like what is it called? The table of elements?
It looks like a periodic table of elements. At least like the consonant too. Yeah. There's lines and it's a grid. Yeah. You can kind of place something where it is.
And then there are some spaces where like, okay, why is there not a sound here? Like, what am I missing? Or is this even complete? It looks incomplete, right? Mm-hmm. So in my case, after like trying to see all these, trying to understand all these charts, I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to use, it's not really a chart. It's just a little appendix, I guess, of the OED, the Oxford English Dictionary. And they show the sounds that they use for their like representation of words. And I was like, okay, I'm going to use that one. But also, like you said, you have your own chart. I was like, they're missing this sound that I've been using like since I started using the IPA. So I'm gonna use it. So in a way, I have also my own chart, but I don't present it as a chart because it can be like, it took me years, like especially the vowel chart, the one that looks like a...
They call it like a quadrilateral, I think.
Quadrilateral vowels.
Good time to bring in our handy mouth model, right? So so when they say, it's not square, the chart, right? The chart, and you'll see below, it's got one angle on it. And that's because if you look at the lower part of the jaw, when it opens, it comes back. So when you look at the chart, it's almost a square. It's kind of trapezoidal almost. And then it's got one big angle. And that's the reason for the shape, you know, behind it.
Yeah. I don't remember. No one explained this to me. Like, okay, so this quadrilateral, that's a representation of where the sounds are produced in your mouth. I was like, I just see a weird square there, right? After years, or maybe it was with you, I can't remember. Like, I was like, oh, okay, so if we overlap the chart in a person's mouth on the side, then, oh, okay, that's like, that's a diagram, that the actual diagram, like your mouth is actually a map of sounds, right? Yeah, but I didn't know that. Yeah, it took me years.
That is something I love about the IPA. Love you, IPA. But I think that once you know that, you're like, oh, that's the key. I see it's a map, right? So the vowel chart has this shape because if you look at their profile, right? Yeah. Your jaw doesn't just go straight down like a robot. No, it kind of goes back. So that totally makes sense. And when you said earlier, oh, the consonants are like the periodic table of elements, there are spaces that are blank, which I think is also true for chemicals that they haven't found yet. There are spaces on our consonant chart that are blacked out because the human mouth or our apparatuses, we can't make those combinations.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they're impossible.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. And it's also kind of incomplete based on what language you're looking at, because the sounds of English are going to be different slightly from the sounds of maybe Spanish, right? You have your ñ, right? We have different sounds in German and French, right? There's more or fewer based on the language. So there could be blank spots that are possible but are not in English, or blank spots that are blacked out because nobody can produce those. So at least no humans that they've found, I suppose. Yeah. Oh, that's actually a really good point. So if you look at these charts, you've got your consonants, you've got your vowels, you've got your what we call diacritics, which are little marks that give you extra information. And then there's another part that's called non-pulmonic, right? And so in some languages, you have click sounds, right? You have, instead of like egressive sounds, where I'm pushing the air out to make a sound, in some languages, you're making the noise as you're sucking the air in. So those are ingressive as well. So there's a whole other part to the chart that I don't really use too much, which I imagine.
Yeah, me neither. Mm-hmm. You do know this, broad transcription and narrow transcription. I don't, like with my students, I don't go that far because the IPA, again, is just like the little wheels of a system that is, I mean, if you really want to like speak clearly, the way I see it, it's a pyramid. And I think Judy Gilbert sees it this way too, but she sees it in an inverted way. So basically, you know what I'm talking about, the pyramid?
Explain. I think I'm seeing it in my head, but like explain for everybody else what you're seeing.
Yeah, so Judy Gilbert is an expert in English teaching and language and pronunciation. And so she sees pronunciation of language as a pyramid where at the top you have the individual sounds, and then you have, so it's individual sounds, syllable stress, word stress, and then the complete sentence, something like that, right? So to her, in her view, I may be misremembering, right? But like you have to pay attention to the rhythm of the complete phrase. And then you can start polishing up the other elements so that at the end, at the peak, you have the individual sounds. Mm. To me, that makes sense. But in my experience and as a speaker of a language that is not... So there's two categories, right? Help me remember this. So it's syllable-stressed languages.
Syllable-timed languages.
Syllable-timed.
Yeah, if we're talking about the rhythm, you can say syllable-timed languages and stress-timed languages.
Right.
Or time-stress. People use both.
So English and Spanish, they belong to a separate... I mean, to each category. So in my experience and as the way I learned it and the way I've seen, it's easier for us to understand this concept of, oh, okay, so English has a different set of sounds. It works better if we start with the individual, with the people. And then, because, you know, since we don't have these concepts of stress, rhythm, and intonation interiorized, like they're not part of our speech, it's really hard to first understand that they exist and then use them. So if we start with like the easiest part, which is the IPA, I mean, in my experience, then we can go move over to the other ones.
I totally agree with what you're saying about like, this is manageable, right? Here's a sound. Give me a map of the sound. Tell me, for example, if I take my trusty mouth model, tell me where to put my tongue, right? Tell me exactly what to do. I can make that sound, right? So I agree with that because it's very measurable. If I am coming from, let's say, we're coming from Spanish. I think we were going to tell this story earlier. If I'm coming from a Spanish-speaking background and I'm moving towards English, like I might think about, well, where exactly is my tongue hitting for maybe a T or a D sound or even a TH sound, right? Because even though we have those same letters represented, we have the same symbols, they could be slightly differently articulated in there. And we don't see that in the chart.
And some resources show these diagrams of like representations of like the mouth, but it's still too foreign to me. Like I never found them helpful. I don't know if it's the same, if it happened to you with French, but like when I saw those, like even like animated versions of the mouth, like a transversal, like to me was like, but I can't see my own mouth. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm like, even if I try to imagine the way it worked with me, it was just by listening someone say the sound in an isolated, first isolated, then in a word, then in a sentence. And then I would also get feedback.
And then I think goes to your point of like, we all learn differently. We all learn best in different ways. So figuring out what works for you, is it sounds first? Is it mapping it? Is it like, hey, tell me what to do with my tongue and my jaw and my lips, or, you know, voicing. A lot of people don't even know what voicing is. And once you find that out, you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, vocal cords.
An F and a V, they're different, you know, or S and a Z. And so like, to me, I'm very kinesthetic, right? And I'm like, oh, let me feel it. I can tell, like, to me, my tongue is a little more forward. And like, for me, that totally works. You're very auditory. Probably. And I know not everyone prescribes to that kind of like learning thing. But my point is like, find out what works for you, because you said with the pyramid, right? For some people, they listen to that rhythm and they pick it up and then they say, okay, what are the important words here? Okay, how many syllables does that word have? And now I'm getting, you know, closer and closer. Whatever works for you, babe, like go for it. And that's what I think.
Yeah, they both have their pros and cons, because I've noticed that if you start with like the lower category, the rhythm, like for example, like this is a very easy way to see how it like that in real life. People who went to live in the US and they picked up language, they have like, well, in general, right, I'm just generalizing, but accent is quite strong, sometimes not very clear, but you can kind of tell what they're saying just because of the rhythms, because of the music of the sentence, right?
You can pick out the stressed words. You get the key words of what they're trying to relay. Yeah, that's a good
point. But the peak is missing, right? And then in our case, in like us learning English with a Spanish background, with not a lot of exposure to the language, like right away. Yeah, I think if we start with the peak, then we can go a little bit lower down that pyramid. Yeah, so I think it works both ways. But in my experience, it worked better, like starting with the IPA. And then it made sense more easily.
And what you just said earlier, too, to bring it back around, when you were saying like, hey, man, this chart is like, doesn't tell us everything. Like what you just said, it literally only tells you pronunciation of vowels and consonants. It's, what was the way that you put it? It's an imperfect tool, right? Because like you said, voices is, we could say digital, meaning it's way more complex. And here's this like kind of analog tool. It's just, it's a 2D written. It's a 2D written chart, right?
It's only so much structure. You can capture visually. It's like listening to a record, like a vinyl. And then listening to...
How old are you? No.
And also listening to the same music in like on a CD, just analog and digital. But I don't think it's really, I don't think it's really a good analogy, because they both, like perceptually, they're the same thing.
Maybe it's live versus recorded. Like if you're in a live space, let's say you go to a coffee shop that's got live music, right? There's something about the room. There's something about the way things echo, you know, and is it acoustic? Is it electric? Right? There's so many things you can't pick up in a recording, you know? And so maybe that's a still not perfect, but other kind of way to think about
it. There's a way to see it.
Yeah. But we've got these mouth structures that are way complicated, and then what, a chart? Thanks.
And that's another thing. Okay, let me just add one little, what is it called?
Keep going. Caveat?
No, it's a little, like, add salt to the wound. So the thing is, in American English, like, one of the most confusing things for me when I started using the IPA is it shows the length marks. And I trained myself to use the IPA with the length marks. And years later, I found out, oh, okay, so that's the... Because I trusted the official representation, but it leans more toward the RP pronunciation, British.
Received pronunciation, we call it. Yeah, like we can say the Queen's English, the standard British,
And in American English, they don't... Like, those length marks, they don't make sense.
Yeah, we don't.
They make things more confusing. And they use other symbols, so I had to like retrain myself. So yeah, again, it's not the perfect tool, but there's also no consensus. So
I was just going to say, when you mentioned earlier dictionaries, I was like, oh, yeah, we got to talk about how, like, you've gone through the pains of learning IPA, you know, you've paid your dues, and then you go to different dictionaries and they say different things, not necessarily because of British versus American, but because dictionaries do their own thing. And they just, one dictionary is like, we're going to do it this way. This is our protocol. And the other dictionary is like, we're going to do another thing and we're going to use length marks. And yeah,
that's. To me, that's a little, like, beyond confusing or annoying. It makes me feel sometimes a little bit sad because, like, with my students, if I try to be consistent and use my version of the chart, the OED, because I say I'm taking it from the OED, I'm just adding one sound that they're not using. But, I mean, that doesn't prevent them to see sometimes different representations. And then they're like, okay, so you told me it was this way to represent it. Why am I seeing this other one? And then also have to, and then, so I always have to go back to, okay, there's no consensus. Everyone, like, there's no governance. Like,
oh, I think I know what you mean. It's like the Wild West.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's a land of, not outlaws. No man's land.
No man's land. Yeah. That's what I always try to do.
Nobody has governance over it, right? Yes. So there's no governing body over all the dictionaries to whip them all in line. So beyond frustrating, yeah, because then we end up explaining to students, yes, that's what this dictionary says, but, you know, and that's, it makes you sad. It kind of makes me angry. Like, like, come on, dictionaries. You're supposed to be who we look
act
to.
Together.
Yeah, work together, dictionaries. Like, come to some kind of consensus.
Right.
Yeah. So it just compounds the problems, you know, sometimes. Mm. Oh, totally.
I guess at some point you reach that level of mastery.
Oh, mastery. Yeah. Okay. So you reach that level of mastery. Yeah.
And then you're like, you know what? I think there's something more beyond the IPA. And I think that's also a good way to, like, detect, I guess, that there are more things that you need to work on, or we need to work on. That's how I learned about stress, rhythm, and intonation, the other three pillars of this pyramid. Because even though I remember seeing this pyramid like 10 years ago or 13 years ago, and honestly, like, I understood it in theory, like, my brain could understand it, but my soul couldn't. Like, it's almost like my soul couldn't, like, it didn't really it didn't enter my soul, so.
Like you said, you didn't internalize it, right? And then you have to kind of internalize it and almost like embody it and live it, right? Because it's a language and it's how you communicate, and keeping all those things in your head at once as you're trying to speak, like, wow. Yeah, even just one thing at a time, right? And you're like, what part of the sentence is most important? And where do I breathe? And then that doesn't even include, like, connected speech, you know, or I think, did you mention intonation? Was it on the pyramid? I don't think so.
No,
right? So even that we can say is it's not totally complete. So we have to kind of put all the pieces together and explain to students why they're confused. I would be too. We were before. We've gone through all of this and we've kind of, like, put it all together to be like, here, you see, this is the simplest way we can look at this. And here's how it can actually be helpful to you, because it should be helpful. And you said earlier, they're kind of like training wheels on a bike. So just use it when it's helpful to you. And if it's no longer helpful to you, take the training wheels off. Because sometimes, you know, keeping the bike analogy, when you keep the training wheels on too long, then that's actually kind of, it's going to be hurting you in a way
you
too.
You can't go that fast. When you're riding a bike in the mountains, what do you call it?
Mountain biking?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I was actually thinking, the IPA, I think, it can have a lot of cons, but at the same time, it's a great way to understand pronunciation, because it's like, you take that first step, and then the other three levels of the pyramid, in my experience, it was very, and I think it's not only my experience, it's like, I see it, I look around and I notice that it's also same problem, because there are not a lot of teachers that can teach, like, stress and then rhythm and then intonation. Now it's like, there's like, you can try, but it's more like a, and I always try to do it this way, because it's like a web. Like, if you explain stress, you're also going to explain stress. It's connected to rhythm. If you talk about rhythm, then there's also intonation. So it's all these elements together are the elements that make our speech sound clear, right?
So no wonder everyone's confused.
Right?
No wonder that people have a hard time teaching it, because you have to teach what is each thing separately, but also you have to teach how they weave together, because they do and they have to. But when you kind of look at it all at once, maybe from far away, you're like, it all sounds like one thing, or I don't understand. Isn't this? And you're like, it's related, you know? And so, like, even just syllable stress, right? And then word stress. So, which I know people use those labels differently. But to me, syllable stress is which part of the word is stressed. And
what, in acento.
Oh, yeah, we have to do more Spanish. But then word stress is, okay, in my sentence or in my phrase, which whole word is important in the key information, right? Syllable stress, you're like, not a choice. It's right or wrong. Check it out in the dictionary. Mostly they agree. But then in word choice, like, it's totally up to you. Right? Like, what do you want to say here? And that alone is kind of mind-blowing, because people are like, what do you mean? So there's rules or there's, like, not rules? What am I supposed to do here? So I can understand how difficult it is. But you had a really good analogy, thinking about the idea of being far away. Mm-hmm. We were talking about painting, right?
Yeah,
do you remember what you said about that?
I was trying to think about the best analogy. And it's always like every time I think about one, there's like this little detail escaping me, right? But it's because of the complexity of the topic. So I know that analogies are supposed to be simple. Right? But the simplest way I can think of the IPA in pronunciation, like how it all fits together. Let's say that you are a painter. Instead of you speak English and I speak Spanish as their first language, is you are a painter and I'm a painter, right? We both can paint beautiful things on a canvas, right? Mm. But if I look at your paintings, I'm like, I can do that, right? And then I try to do it. And it looks okay, but I'm not trained enough to see the differences between our paintings, right? I can try to make my painting look like yours until someone comes up to me and tells me, you know what? She's actually using a different set of colors. And this is how you use them, is how you combine them. And then I can understand. And then I can start using them and be like, oh, you know what? Yeah, that's why I never noticed that I was making, like, my colors were not her colors. Mm. To me, it looked kind of the same.
Blue is blue, but no, blue is not blue. There's so many different kinds of blue. And I was just using a different tube of blue, or maybe we were using the same blue, but from different manufacturers.
Yeah. And that's another thing, because like a big difference between Spanish and English is, or actually English and Spanish is, English has more sounds than Spanish.
Mm.
So you have more colors than I do, right? And so to me, it looks like, it looks okay, it's blue, but you can see the difference between, because your brain is trained to distinguish between these two hues of blue, let's say. And then like the IPA is that set of colors, right? Mm. Both language, I mean, Spanish and English have a different set of sounds. And so, yeah, it's going to take a while to learn how to use my colors to paint like you. But at the same time, it's not going to look the same. And then that's when someone else will come up to me and be like, you know,
how
it's not only the colors.
Yeah, it's like the brush strokes, right? Like, I paint from bottom to top and you paint from top to bottom. Or my strokes are longer and yours are shorter, right? Or I use a different kind of brush, and if mine is more of a fan and yours is like a cute little comes to a point. If we take this analogy back to the beginning, it's the painting, guys, is speaking, right? Mm-hmm. Those of us who articulate sounds and use language to speak, those of us that can and do, right? The painting is the speaking. It's our words, our how we speak. What we're saying is the IPA is the colors. And then all the other stuff is all the other stuff, right? The intonation, the rhythm, all of that stuff.
Which is fascinating to me. I've been spending the last, 4 or 5 years, actually with you and your membership in the training, like for teachers, but I also take the other lessons as well. It's just to see my blind spots, because, I mean, I mentioned it before, like the fossilization. And also there's new things that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's always a good idea to keep learning, because you never know what you don't know.
And when we are together in either, it could be our teacher's club or it could be like office hours, whatever. I love that idea of, hey, we've all looked at some of this stuff and there's no consensus. Let's kick around this idea, you know, right now. For example,
Test the colors.
Yeah, exactly. Let's paint the colors, right? Let's even do some finger painting.
And, yeah, it's like a sandbox.
Yeah. And it's more like, well, what do we think? Because there is no like IPA mafia out there that's going to come and tell us we're right or wrong. And language is always changing. And there's so many different accents out there. And there's so many ways to say things, you know. And I think it's a sandbox. We like to explore. We like to play. We like to discuss and debate, like, you know, resources that are out there. What have you found? What have you found? And that's the thing I appreciate about you, Mark, is like you're always open to new ideas.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it's like it's nice to bounce those things.
Yeah, exactly. We're bouncing off each other.
Off of each other. Yeah,
because all the other teachers also have different ideas and approaches, ideas. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And because rarely is there like a right and a wrong. So we need this community of people. We need someone else to ask. For a lot of people that are in our community, they just come and they're just confused and they just want to shine a light on there and like, why am I so confused? And half the time it's like, it's not you. Yeah. It's what's out there. And just thinking about it, being interested in it, you know, it helps you to see things differently, like you're painting. And, you know, you just have a different light, you have a different filter, or it's a different time of day, you know. So I think the most important thing is curiosity, you know, exploring these things, knowing that there are resources out there, like you didn't know at one point, there's resources out there. But also if you're confused by those things.
Some of those resources are super confusing. I keep thinking about these charts that you can find online. It's like, Jesus, like, which one is the right one, right?
Or which one is the best one for me? Or what's even the difference, you know, out there? Like, earlier we were talking about the vowel chart and why did I make my own vowel chart is because when I see some of the charts, they are for native speakers. And they might say, for example, okay, the E sound is in fleece, right? And the oo sound is in goose. How many second language learners do you know who are...
Yeah, I learned who know fleece in like 3 years ago.
Right. Yeah. Like, so it's not helpful for them. So we're like, okay, what can we do to make this accessible? And to bring that back around, you have a great course. Why don't you tell people about your course?
I do. Some of you may already know about it or have taken it. It's just it's a course on how to understand to use the IPA as a non-native speaker of English, and your first language is Spanish. So I explico todo en español cómo pronunciar los sonidos del inglés. And it's a pay what you like course. Ustedes pagan lo que quieran. Es solamente con el propósito de que ustedes conozcan. It's like a tunnel. Es como un túnel en el cual la primera luz es el IPA. Y después ustedes solos pueden empezar a iluminar el resto del camino. Obviamente con coaching, ¿no? Pero ustedes van a encontrar ese camino. Es el IPA y de eso es mi curso. Es un entrenamiento completo. Nada de confusión de que chart over here. No, it's my system. I mean, I learned. So yeah, that course is like the distillation of my experience.
It's your experience. It's your expertise, right?
And this also is... my learning. It's not only my experience.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You've learned it. Your experience in learning too. So you've gone through it. You've been through it. You're like, this is what helped me. I've seen it helps other people. Let me make a course. Pay what you like. See if it helps you.
Yeah.
And until, like you said, until you have a membership too, but you have your Telegram. People can chat on the Telegram. But until you have a space where people can come live and ask questions, I can fill in that too.
Exactly. Because you have the office hours. And so that's the feedback.
Accent Academy.
Feedback Club is Tuesdays, right? And office hours is Wednesdays.
Yep. And then Teachers Club is on Thursdays.
Teachers Academy is Thursdays. So, but if you're not a teacher, then you can take the other two, Tuesday and Wednesday. 1 hour Tuesday, 1 hour Wednesday. It's, I mean...
Yeah, you're going to really excel.
Because exactly.
I think it comes down to what we said. Like, you need to bounce your ideas off of people. You have questions. You need to get answers, right? I don't blame you. It's confusing. We've been there. We're trying to make it simple for other people. And we do love the IPA. Love you, IPA. But this one. But yeah, it could
be better. But it's got its limitation. And there's only so much we can polish with the IPA, especially if we only do it on our own. One of the things that I noticed, because like I trained myself with these podcasts and videos and on YouTube. After that, you do need some human a human coach that can help you see those blind spots. Because one thing is, oh, yeah, I think I understand it. Well, actually, I was not even at that point. I was like, yeah, I understand it. You know, like I didn't even think, like, I think I understand. No, I was like more proud of, yeah, I got it, right? And then I started like testing and I was like, oh, wait, no, I'm not making this sound right. So yeah, there's only so much we can learn until a human person whose first language is English can help us right away. They can see our blind spots.
Yeah.
Bianca.
Expertise.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark. It was so much fun talking to you today. We're here live.
Yeah.
I was going to say every week, but no. Because Mark lives in Mexico City.
Live.
Yeah, we finally, it's our first time we met. And we want to say thank you guys for watching this very special episode of
Una conversación acerca del IPA con Bianca.
Yay! And thanks for listening all the way to the end, everybody. Most of the people in my community are passionate about things like this, and I think it's important to have a place to make friends who share your interests. So if this was a cool episode topic for you, consider joining my community. It's free to join, and even at the free level, you can get 2 live events with me every month. And you know, if you stick to the end of every podcast episode, I'd like to share a little secret story about what's going on in life lately. Well, just after we recorded this episode live, Mark and I dropped him back at his hotel. And just as we got there, it started raining like cats and dogs because it's the rainy season here in Guadalajara. And he's from Mexico City. He didn't think to bring an umbrella with him. But rainy season in Guadalajara can be really treacherous. I mean, sometimes the rain is so strong, it wipes buses off the road. So luckily, I know how to avoid all the tunnels and areas that might be flooded on my way home after dropping him off. But there's really no way to avoid this kind of last intersection by my house because it's right next to what we call a watershed. That's where the rainwater all drains down into. So I had gone all this way and, oh my God, the last street that I come to had water up to the doors of the cars. And I was kind of afraid it was going to leak into the car, but I guess I got lucky because it was totally fine after that, albeit a little scary. So if you have another specific topic about accents or pronunciation that you'd like to hear about, just let me know and I'll try to make it a reality. See you in the next episode.